Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Mackie. Today is Monday, January 24th, 2022. I will be reading from the Odessa American. Obituary. Gail Victoria Guys Hyman. Kermit, Texas. Gail Victoria Hyman, age 83, passed away on Thursday, January 20th, 2022, in Midland, Texas. She was born on February 22nd, 1938, in Pecos, Texas, to Victor and Adeline Wixon Geis. Gail married Don Hyman on July 30th, 1955, in Carlsbad, New Mexico, and they shared many wonderful years together. Gail was a member of the Southside Baptist Church in Monahans and was very active within her church. Gail enjoyed reading, painting, gardening, and sewing. She spent many hours volunteering at the Monahans Library over the years. She will be dearly missed. Gail is survived by her husband, Don Hyman, of Odessa, Texas, son, Mike Hyman, and wife, Susie, of Odessa, Texas, grandchildren, Jared Hyman, and wife, Lori, Brandy Brazell and husband Joe, and Josh Hyman and wife Kelly, and great-grandchildren Reese, Rowan, Madison, Lorelei, Marley, and Holt. She was preceded in death by her parents, Victor and Adeline Geis, son, Dan Hyman, grandson, Matt Hyman, and great-grandson, Jude Hyman. A private memorial service will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Southside Baptist Church in Monahans, 1402 South Main, Monahans, Texas, 79756. Arrangements are entrusted to Family Services Funeral Parlor, and condolences may be sent to the family online at www.fsfp.com. Death Notice. Bernie S. Rich Tull, 83, of Lubbock, died Thursday, January 20th, 2022, in Lubbock, Texas. Celebration of life is scheduled for 1 p.m., January 25th, 2022, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, January 22, 2022. Viewpoints. Let's face human trafficking issues now. Educate yourself to see the signs of a problem because it can save a life. By Lisa Bounds and Lori Perales. There's an often restated and repurposed quote, "If not me, then who? If not now, then when?" In the nonprofit world, I think we often feel a calling to something. And when people ask why, this is the answer. If I don't take up this mantle, who will? If we don't face this issue head on now, when will we? And how many more lives will be shattered in the process of putting it off longer? As we look at the growing human trafficking crisis, we see the lives broken, we see the damage done, and we realize that now is the time to face this head on. While we are two different organizations, we do share a common goal, providing healing for victims of trauma. For Reflection Ministries of Texas, this is specifically the trauma of human trafficking, and for the Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy Center, MRCCAC. It is the trauma brought on by sexual assault and child abuse, which occur in many trafficking situations. According to a study from the University of Texas at Austin School of Social Work, Texas has more than 300,000 victims of human trafficking, and of those, it's estimated that 79,000 are minors. We see them in our community. Reflection Ministries provides 24/7 direct care for trafficking victims, allowing them resources they need to rebuild their lives, their trust, and their hope. The MRCCAC uses a metric to determine the risk of trafficking for many of our clients, in some cases catching instances of trafficking and helping these survivors with not only the trauma of their abuse, but also to rebuild their lives and escape trafficking. Over and over, we see that human trafficking doesn't always look like we think it should look. It's not dark alleys, drug addicts, and bad choices. It can be the teenage girl whose older boyfriend says he loves her and convinces her to sneak out of her house at night with him, only to then sell her to his friends. He returns her home before morning, and she's in class by 8 a.m. She's not missing. There's no national hunt for her. No speculation as to who took her or why. She feels like it's her fault for sneaking out, and she worries how her parents will react if they know what she did, so she doesn't tell anyone. The boyfriend keeps this going by holding that first night over her. Your parents will hate you if they find out. Nobody else will want you if they know what you did. January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and we once again find ourselves thinking, if not now, then when? So we humbly come to the community that has long sustained both of our nonprofits and ask you now to do something that costs nothing but could save a life. Educate yourself. Learn the signs of trafficking in both adults and children. Stand up when something feels wrong. Call the Department of Family and Protective Services, the National Human Trafficking Hotline, or law enforcement. Do you remember the news story from 2017 when an Alaska Airlines flight attendant rescued a teenage girl from human trafficking? The flight attendant's training told her something was off when the girl, who was disheveled and looked as though she'd been through quite a bit, boarded with a well-dressed older man. She was even more concerned when the man was defensive whenever she tried to engage the pair. She left a note for the girl in a bathroom, to which the girl replied that she needed help. The airplane's pilot alerted the authorities in San Francisco, where the plane was heading, and police were waiting for the man when they arrived. We all need to be as aware as this flight attendant was. We all need to know the signs of trafficking and how to report it. You never know when the 15 minutes it would take to learn the signs could change the course of someone's life. And when you make that call, when that person has been rescued from trafficking, we will both be here to support the survivors in our different ways. Lisa Bounds is the CEO and founder of Reflection Ministries of Texas, and Lori Perales is the executive director of the Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy Center. China Not Excused from World Criticism by Bob Fu and Jonathan Dingler. China Aid. Let's be honest. Nobody cares what's happening to the Uyghurs, said Chamath Palihapitiya, a minority owner of the Golden State Warriors. Of all the things that I care about, yes, it is below my line. Social media caught a blaze Monday as Chamath's comments about the Uyghur crisis surfaced from a clip of the All In podcast. Many were shocked by his blatant apathy for the gross human rights violations in Xinjiang, while others defended him, citing the context of the podcast. After all, Chamath is the CEO of Social Capital, an organization whose mission is to advance humanity by solving the world's hardest problems. It's not that he doesn't care about the Uyghurs. He just thinks the United States should handle its own issues first. However, the context does nothing but expose Chamath's stagnant whataboutism. The pillar of his argument is as laughable as it is blood-boiling. I don't think I have the moral absolutism to judge China, and I would say that when NATO is silent, the United Nations is silent, all of Western Europe is silent, and America is effectively silent, that this issue may be small data points being extrapolated in a way to create a narrative that may not be true. And if it is true, there is a responsibility for those body politics to do something, because that is the early warning signal that the rest of world uses to say, hold on, let me reprioritize my list of things. Chamath claims that because he is not an absolute moral authority, he cannot judge China's actions. Admittedly, he is right. No one with an ounce of moral fiber could have knowledge of the Uyghur genocide without caring. Who does Chamath then entrust with this absolutism? Kazakhstan and China, both of which utilize mass surveillance for mass incarceration and have little to no free speech, occupy seats on the United Nations Human Rights Council. The Chinese Communist Party weighs in on human rights issues, despite President Xi disregarding the concept as a Western ideology. The United Nations, a supposed early warning signal, cannot enforce its own Paris Climate Accords, constantly receiving criticism from Swedish teenager Greta Thunberg. Chamath's reasoning disqualifies every institution and government to call out China on its atrocious human rights track record. Who, with their spotless track record, liberated the prisoners of Auschwitz in 1945? It was the same regime that would eventually kill an estimated 20 million people, Stalin's Soviet Russia. The Allies would go on to hold Nazi Germany accountable for war crimes, charging them with crimes against humanity. Imagine how absurd it would be if the United States suddenly backed out of the Nuremberg trials because of its state of civil rights at the time. According to Chamath, the U.S. should have cleaned up its own house before taking any conclusive action. There is no doubt that the United States still works to practice the principles on which it was founded, but it is somehow impossible for the billionaire's simultaneous support of both domestic and global progress. He's more concerned with the thought of virtue signaling another nation, and any effort to expose this inhumanity is merely an effort to concoct an anti-China narrative. Tell that to Xinjiang survivor Gulzira Alhan, rescued through China Aid. She suffered at 4 different camps just over a year, bound in shackles for 6 months. Tell the families of the victims they are small data points. Each action the world takes, whether it's the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act or the Uyghur Tribunal, is a step toward justice. We have not yet solved the problem, but we move a little closer each day. We act to help the oppressed, not because we are perfect already. Instead of denying and looking for excuses for inaction and silence in the face of evil, we have both a moral imperative and historical experience to tackle this global menace of genocide while holding ourselves accountable for the better. Bob Fu served in the Chinese underground church until he escaped to the United States in 1997. Fu quickly became one of the leading voices for persecuted faith communities in China. A Midland native, Jonathan Dingler graduated from Hardin-Simmons University. He currently works as China Aid's communications director. Making changes to mail-in ballot process is not voter suppression. Stuart Doreen, editor. I disagree with President Joe Biden, who insinuated that the elections this year will be illegitimate if Democratic Party legislation isn't passed. He's wrong. One can't call the elections from 2020 the most secure in history and then call into question the system 14 months later. Our president isn't alone with claims of voter suppression. This past week, Midland County Democratic Party officials stated that voter suppression was alive and well in Midland County. I again disagree, but don't take my word for it. I asked Midland County Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves. She said that while there will be changes for those who vote by mail, it is not voter suppression. Today's commentary isn't about calling out hyperbolic Democrats in Midland County. My only advice to them is worry more about building up the ranks inside the county. Inspire, don't scare. Put together a field of candidates that can compete in November. As it stands now, the general election will be nothing more than a bye week for the local Republican Party. you represent Democrats in Midland County, not the out-of-touch in Washington or Austin. Give our residents a reason to be excited about what is happening locally. As it stands now, the trip to the ballot box this year for Democrats will be to vote for governor and not much else. Local Democrats deserve better. Getting back to voting in Midland, I am of the opinion that Graves and her staff deserve the highest marks for making voting accessible for all. This past week, she spent time with me to explain the changes that will take place for those people who want a ballot by mail. She said it is a little more complicated, but that the elections office is there to help those, even if it means meeting someone curbside. Here are some changes, as she highlighted. Every person has to request their own application for mail-in ballot. If someone calls, he or she can request one, but someone else in the house must make their own request. If that means passing the phone to that other person, Graves said that will work. We have to speak to each person individually, Graves said. The ballot envelope requires the information that the elections office has on file. When an application to receive a mail-in ballot is sent, the person must put their driver's license number or last four digits of their social security number on a specifically marked place of the flap of the envelope. Graves recommends putting both. If the information that is part of application doesn't match what the elections office has on file, the applicant will be sent a rejection letter. Then they have 6 days to come in and show us their ID, Graves said. Mark the annual box on the application and you will receive every ballot for which one is eligible to vote that year. Each January, you must do it again. College students can't have someone else get their mailed ballot application for them. One can be downloaded. This is available to anyone. Anyone bringing in a mail-in ballot request must do it themselves. Graves said, if needed, an elections office official will meet someone curbside to take the application from them. We will still jump through hoops, Graves said. The hoops we will jump through have just been changed. Don't wait until the last minute. Unsure about voting status or some other part of the process, give yourself time to make sure you can participate. A person must be registered to vote for the primary elections by January 31. The deadline to submit an application for ballot by mail is February 18. www.co.midland.tx.us/328/elections-office. Contact the Midland County Elections Office at 432-688-4912 or go to for more information. It really doesn't matter your political preference. The Midland County Elections Office has a record of making it easy to be part of the process. The move to election centers, one isn't restricted to one precinct, has provided convenience beyond belief. And in most cases, there aren't the long waits that we see in more populated areas, especially if one takes advantage of the ample opportunity to cast a ballot. The process has changed for those wanting to vote by mail. Still, those who choose to educate themselves on the process shouldn't have a problem voting for the candidate that they choose, Democrat or Republican. Am I slowly slipping into a life of hoarding? By Iris Foster, Reporter Telegram contributor. As we take down holiday decorations, there's a tendency to evaluate the state of garlands, trees, lights, and other trimmings for their expiration dates. At what point do we cross the line between lazy procrastinators or sentimentalists who just shove things back in boxes for storage, and hoarders whose possessions will one day cover every surface? Are you destined to become a hoarder if, like me, you save fancy Christmas package trims and unusually shaped boxes for the future? Or if you cut up soiled t-shirts to use for cleaning rags? I'm still dusting with cloth diapers and my youngest is 32. Or if you save certain clothes that still fit to wear as soon as they come back in style. Our attic contains multiple strands of Christmas lights of various colors and styles to be used again someday. Never mind that we're too old to climb ladders to install them. When do we know that we are going beyond Keep Midland Beautiful's motto of reduce, reuse, recycle? Driving down Midland streets, I notice there are more cars in driveways and by the curb than in garages. Is that because garages are too full of stuff, or because they are used as additional recreation space? Storage units are plentiful, come in a variety of sizes and with climate controls for our stuff. Many are in use around town. My late parents came of age during the Great Depression, when everything was scarce. Then they lived through rationing during World War II, so they truly believed in hanging on to reusable or fixable items. What's our excuse with nearly everything a disposable commodity? Can we blame the makers of storage totes? How can we tell that we're sliding down that slippery slope to barely being able to navigate through our homes because of piles of stuff? I believed retaping a googly-eyed Santa from a 1977 Grammer Murphy wrapped box to my children's special present for probably 10 years was precious. It was only thrown away when one eye went missing. My husband and others kept shelves of professionally bound journals and books from the 80s, although they never referred to them because current resources are digitized. Fortunately, there are interior designers and friends of the library who will take such tomes. I checked with a mental health professional to find out if this is hoarding, sentimentalism, or just lazy procrastinating. Brian Wingfield, LMFT, at Samaritan Counseling Center, acknowledged that we all have a closet or garage that needs decluttering, and many of us hoarded paper products during the pandemic. However, he says, a true hoarder has a higher rate of anxiety and depression, along with an obsessive compulsion to save things and acquire more possessions. Hoarders, he continued, because of pressures within their emotional health, can't stop themselves from buying at garage sales and other venues and feel the need to hold on to stuff they already have because they believe they may need it someday. I've read Marie Kondo's book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, and followed some of her guidelines for eliminating stuff that no longer brings joy. During the pandemic lockdown, I divided photos among relatives and will scan them into the cloud to eliminate that clutter. I was told long ago by a friend how to preserve children's projects without keeping the physical items. Take their photo with their creation for posterity. I have my recycle bins handy in the kitchen for plastics, aluminum, cardboard, and paper. But what to do about gifts and cards from deceased friends and relatives, or specific kitchen items, crepe maker and baking dishes like springform pans that haven't been used in years? They don't take up much space, nor do Christmas trims and special boxes. But is this just the beginning of the rationalizations by a future hoarder? Please stop me if you see me at a garage sale that isn't my own.
Concerns about nucleated blood cells. Dear Dr. Roach, I had a recent blood test that showed a nucleated red blood cell. Should I be concerned about this? I have family history of kidney cancer and lymphoma. LH. Answer: mature red blood cells do not have nuclei. One of the last things they do before going into the circulation is eject their nucleus. Red blood cells don't divide. They come from progenitor cells. If the bone marrow is replacing red cells as fast as it can, many immature nucleated red blood cells will be found in the circulating blood. This can happen after a person loses a lot of blood or if they have ongoing breakdown of blood cells. They can also occur in some uncommon bone marrow diseases. A single nucleated red blood cell on the peripheral smear is not worrisome, provided that there are no other signs of bleeding or blood breakdown. The same is true for precursors of the white blood cells. Once in a while, in a healthy person, you will see an immature form, which usually stays in the bone marrow, out in the blood. A person reading up on that might think they have leukemia, but most of the time it is just a fluke. It's only when there are repeatedly more than a few that your doctor should be concerned.
This is the Dear Abby column. Grandchild born to widow calls another man daddy. Dear Abby, my grandson passed away 3 months before his daughter was born. When she was 6 months old, her mom moved in with her new boyfriend. We were allowed visits for a couple of years, but then that stopped, so we had to take the mom to court to get visitation again. We learned our visits had been stopped because we referred to her boyfriend by his name instead of Daddy. We are not allowed to tell our grandchild who her father is. At what age should a child be told the truth? And how is all this going to affect my granddaughter? Signed, Truth Teller in the South. Dear Truth Teller, your former daughter-in-law may prefer her little one call her boyfriend Daddy because the man is the only father figure your granddaughter has ever known. The time for her to be told all the facts would be when she's old enough to understand the information and her mother chooses to tell her about her biological father. The truth should not negatively affect her. Dear Abby, how do you deal with a relative whose child is autistic when they come for holiday dinners and let their child climb on the furniture like it's a playground and walk around the house eating and touching everything with soiled hands? These parents constantly post about treating him like a normal child, but they don't treat him normal with expectations. I'm tired of having to constantly supervise him and feel intimidated about saying things like, please don't climb on the furniture, sit at the table when you eat, wash your hands please, etc. What's your advice? Signed, Tentative in Florida. Dear Tentative, quit allowing yourself to be intimidated and tell these parents you would prefer your socializing to be adults only, for the reasons you stipulated in your letter. Or, when you would like to spend time with them, arrange for it to be al fresco rather than inside your home. Thank heavens you live in a state with a mild climate. Dear Abby, I need your thoughts about a good friend who, at the end of the month of my birthday or the first week of the next one, hits me with a birthday card. Then she says she doesn't know my exact birth date, but at least she remembers the month, and therefore I should be thankful. 4 years later, I am tempted to tell her if it's not important enough to remember the day, then why bother? Am I wrong for feeling this way, or should I just be thankful she at least remembers the month? Signed, Birthday Boy in Texas. Dear Birthday Boy, frankly, you are being a bit picky. Not everyone feels as strongly as you do about personal milestones. That said, however, gratitude can't be ordered like an item on a takeout menu, which your friend appears to be trying to convince you to do. Because those birthday cards, which are supposed to invoke warm feelings, have the opposite effect, express that you would prefer she save her postage money. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.